Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
If you're in downtown Alpharetta, go see my friends Travis and Andy at Tringa. They're located in City Center. And if you're going anywhere for spring break, summer break, or fall break, go see the sister restaurant Tringa at Grayton Beach across from the world-famous Red Bar.
This is the Ben Burnett Show, the only show in America that features a one-term has-been retired politician that nobody knows.
Welcome into the Ben Burnett Show. My name is Ben Burnett. My guest today is a returning guest, a proud alumnus of the Ben Burnett Show. Chip Lake, welcome in.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be back.
You're even better looking now than you were the first time.
I know that's not true.
What's changed?
I've gotten older and heavier, so I know that's not accurate. Well, but I appreciate you saying that.
You are what I would consider a lifer in GOP politics in the state of Georgia. And although you tried to get away, it sucked you back in.
It did. I often joke with people that, this is the first cycle that I really didn't do any political activity until after the primary. And so, I do joke, but it is accurate that I can do this 4 months a cycle, Ben, but my days of doing this 24 months a cycle are behind me. They're in the rearview mirror.
Is it more fun to not have to bludgeon people that you may have had good relationships at one point with?
It really was. It was fun to be a part of the primary process and the runoff process from kind of the first row of the boxing ring, as opposed to being inside punching and getting punched. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it, and probably do a lot of that in the future as well. I had a lot of friends that were on both sides of a lot of different primaries, and kind of enjoyed living vicariously through them, but not having to be immersed in all of it.
When we talk about you, so you got into politics more or less when you were at Auburn, and you met Rusty Paul.
That's right.
Who was the mayor of Sandy Springs.
He is. He was not then. He was the chairman of the state Republican Party at the time.
I should say he is.
He is, yes.
And you went to work. You ran some campaigns, volunteered with the Georgia GOP, got into running campaigns. You worked for Lynn Westmoreland, who is a longtime congressman from Columbus.
Actually, he represented Columbus. He's from Coweta County, just south of Noonan, Sharpsburg.
Which is essentially a suburb of Columbus, yeah. Right?
Well, it's more a suburb of Atlanta than it is Columbus. But actually, what he was from Sharpsburg when I started working for him. Now he lives in Grantville, another municipality in Coweta County.
When you look at the experiences you have, so you put Tom Price in Congress, who is a very well-respected guy in Cobb County, North Fulton, went to work for the Trump administration.
Yep.
I know that he is a real sense of pride for you.
Tom's a good friend, and we got together a couple months ago, and that was the first time we had an opportunity to kind of have fellowship in a long time. So we had a lot of stories to share.
I need to get him on.
You do.
Because I've talked to him privately about many of his experiences, especially those as a cabinet member.
Oh, I can only imagine.
President Trump. And if he reveals 1/100th of the things he will tell you privately, it would be the best interview I have ever had.
I bet that is accurate. I bet that is accurate. You should try to get him on because it would be highly entertaining.
And you put who is not running again, Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, into office, and then were then his chief of staff before there was a parting of the waters, I would guess, and you decided that
yes,
you would rather not be affiliated with the gentleman?
The gentleman knows of what he speaks. So, yes, that is a time that I look back at on my career that I'm not very proud of, that I regret engaging in. But, yes, he's lieutenant governor, not running for reelection. He'll be the lieutenant governor for another 5-6 months, and then he'll go on to do other things.
He is somebody that I think is profoundly interesting. Didn't have a remarkable career as a legislator and very little notoriety. Wasn't a chairman of a committee that would get you, not that any chairman of a committee gets you any statewide recognition. It's hard to be famous down there, but raised a mountain of money with a friend of yours and mine in a gentleman who owns a large healthcare provider in Alpharetta. Good family, good people. Mm-hmm. And that really propelled him into that office with that opportunity. When you look at and being on the other side of the primaries in May and seeing Brad Raffensperger win a four-way race that I thought would be wildly competitive and really wasn't as, regardless of what former President Trump said, mm-hmm. Brad Raffensperger is a friend of mine. He's hardly a gregarious personality.
Right.
And seeing Governor Brian Kemp do exceptionally well against David Perdue mm-hmm. and, you know, well, that and Candace Taylor, who I will refuse to ever let come on talk about anything. Were you surprised to see, do you think that Duncan had the tenor to sit there and win re-election if he had wanted to do it? Just being objective.
Yeah, Ben, it's a good question.
And do you think he regrets not?
It's a great question. And I thought about that as I was, you know, watching returns on election night, and you saw, you know, it didn't surprise me that Brad came in first in that race, but it did surprise me a little bit that he avoided a runoff. It didn't surprise me that Brian Kemp beat David Perdue, but the margin I think was surprising. I think that kind of surprised a lot of people. Nobody thought it was going to be as big as it was, and so yeah, it definitely crossed my mind. I mean, yeah, if Jeff Duncan were to have made a different decision than he made, there is certainly a chance. I mean, it's hard to look at the numbers and come to a different conclusion. There is a chance that he could have made it through that primary and been the nominee again for lieutenant governor. But I put an asterisk on that, though, because I know that Brad Raffensperger and Brian Kemp did what they needed to do to win their party's nomination.
They worked
hard. They played a lot of politics. They were good at it. They raised money. They got out. They gripped and grinned. They took criticism, deep criticism. You know, they had to bite their tongue a lot. All those things I know that from working for Jeff Duncan, he doesn't like to do. He hates to do. And so, you know, from a 30,000-foot level, looking at election results, the answer is, yeah, it's certainly possible. But other activities would have had to have taken place in order for Jeff Duncan to put himself in the position to win that primary.
Do you think he had a relationship with Governor Kemp where they would have campaigned and coalesced together at events? Because I view those two as allies, really, because Georgia was public enemy number one in the president's eyes, and they, right, wrong, or indifferent, I'm not arguing who was right and who was wrong, but those three largely appeared to stick together. Whether or not they actually like each other is irrelevant.
Yeah, they did. I mean, look, every elected official and every candidate has a set of strengths and weaknesses. Every human being does. I do, you do, we all do. And when you run for public office, you know, people get to see those out, you know, the lights come on and they get to see that. And so, you know, what I think bonded the governor and the lieutenant governor when they first got in, and I can only speak for that because my time with the lieutenant governor was limited. I was only there a year, but neither one of them were supposed to win their respective primary 4 years earlier. You know, David Schaefer was an overwhelming favorite to defeat Jeff, and Casey Cagle was an overwhelming favorite to be the nominee for our party for governor. And so, even though Brian Kemp and Jeff Duncan, even though their backgrounds are very different, their skill sets are very different, I think it's fair to say that they share a bond in the fact that they both were able to accomplish something that at the beginning nobody thought they could accomplish. And that'll bond you pretty quickly when something like that happens. And
especially when you start seeing adversity from a national stage.
That's exactly right. And so to answer your question on, you know, had Jeff Duncan ran again, excuse me, would they have campaigned together? I mean, that's a tough question to answer. I think it's hard to look at the race that Governor Kemp ran and make any other argument than they ran a perfect primary race. They won by 50 points. I mean, everything that they did worked. It's hard to make an argument to the contrary.
And it's hard to see everything you do work.
Exactly. And so I think it's probably likely that they would all be in a foxhole together, but kind of a private foxhole, and they all run their own races, right? Because, you know, you run on a ticket in a general election because of the turnout mechanism, but in the primaries, that's a completely different dynamic. So it would have been interesting to see how that developed.
You have also. We have a good mutual friend in Doug Collins, who, if you ask me, pound for pound as a legislator, was really probably one of the better members of Congress that the state of Georgia has had. And we both have very good relationships. I trust Doug. I trust his advice. He'll poke at me. I'll come at him. He actually was going to come on today, and then he was like, hey, I'm actually going to talk at CPAC. And I was like, you know, whatever, Doug.
Well, and when he found out I was coming on, he was probably like, I don't want to go on with Chips on, right? I want my own time. I'm just kidding. But I love Doug. He's family to me, and you should have him on.
I asked that question, and you made the point for me. When you run somebody's race, I sat as an elected official, and you never have. How hard is it to... Is it easier to see them as a product? Because I imagine when you get invested in who they are as people, it changes. And you have a relationship with Doug where you cannot separate the two. And I imagine that that makes for some good... I'm sure the fights that the two of you have had are epic over issues.
Oh yeah. I mean, between the fights I had with Doug and Lynn Westmoreland and Jeff, too. I mean, it's part and parcel to... what this space is, right? You have to be able to engage. You have to be able to engage in very frank discussions that are sometimes very, very uncomfortable. And you have to be able to do that without getting your feelings hurt. And you have to be able to do that without thinking that, without thinking that the other doesn't have the other's best interest in mind and at heart. And so the question is, do you think of them as a product? I mean, the campaign produces, I mean, the candidate is, in any campaign, the candidate is the product, but any human being doesn't want to be called a product, right?
They don't, but, right. But it is what, David Perdue is the jean jacket.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it was the brand on there. And so, you know, I think the successful candidates, you know, they thrive on the fact that they're the product, right? I mean, in many respects, because, you know, you're selling a candidate, and unlike a traditional marketing campaign that you do in business, you know, I mean, a business can make profit if they have under 50% of the market share. A campaign closes shop if on election day there's less than 50%. And so, you know, that's what makes what we do from a marketing perspective in campaigns completely different than what happens on the corporate side. And so, yeah, I mean, you have to be family, but then you also have to be able to take a step back and make strategic recommendations and make evaluations about where the campaign is without getting your judgment clouded about how close you might be to a particular candidate. And that's tough because we're all human beings, right? We all have feelings. We don't like it when, you know, we see a member of our family or somebody that we really like going through something difficult. And, you know, running for Congress today, and you understand it, you just served an elected office very recently. I mean, it's a sacrifice, and voters don't really care about that sacrifice, right? No. They want results, and they don't want to hear excuses about why something's not being done.
When you separate that conversation, are there people that you have worked with that it was literally you don't talk to very frequently after? And I'm not asking you to name names. I'm saying, do you finish a race and win and then largely just move on from each other?
I think that generally happens more with a loss than it does a win, right?
You're like, screw Chip Lake.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the reality of it. This is a business that is, at the end of it, it's... you either win or you lose. And it's just that simple. And so, you know, I say all the time in every campaign, no matter what the size, but the bigger campaigns, you deal with this dynamic more. There's always tension. There's a lot of people. They have strong opinions. They're smart. And, you know, there often isn't consensus about big decisions. And so, you know, that creates tension. Tension's good if it's healthy. But at the end of the day, if the campaign that you're working on gets one more vote than the person you're running against,
everybody's friends,
and it's great. And you know, anybody in this business has won and they have lost, and I've certainly done my share of both. And you know, it's always easy. It's much easier, you know, in the campaigns where you win, where you can easily put aside any type of differences after the race. It's a lot harder to do that when you lose, because it's always easy to play Monday morning quarterback and say, what could we have done different?
Forever.
And absolutely. It never ends.
When you look at the state of Georgia with respect to the Republican Party, and I'm not going to ask you for numbers, I'm going to offer that I feel like 47% of the state of Georgia is a relatively straight ticket voting Republican. If it's a little bit less, you can wink at me.
Maybe a tad bit less.
But it's not far.
It's 45-45 probably, and 10% in play. But you got to go get that 45% to get out and vote. Just because they're probably predisposed to vote for you, you can't take it for granted that they're all going to show up and vote. And we saw that on the January 5th election for U.S. Senate. I mean, we should have won both of those seats had our voters gone back to the polls.
Do you hold Donald Trump responsible for that?
You know, I don't hold Donald Trump responsible for that specific. I mean, look,
David doesn't either.
Yeah, there's a lot of blame to go around. I mean, you know, I when you hold a different election so far away from the original election, and I think Senate Bill, I think it was 202 I think Senate Bill 202 changed that. If there's a runoff in this race for U.S. Senate, it won't be a 9-week runoff. I think it's going to be a 5-week runoff. And that's a big distinction, a big difference. But it's all focus. I mean, he had every right to pursue every legal option that he had, and he did. And those activities of trying to win a runoff and challenging an election legally, those have to run parallel tracks. And because they ran parallel tracks, not all of our focus was on one or the other, but our focus was split. The Democrat focus was 110% on turnout and January 5th. And I think, you know, I think we ended up, that was a big cost for the turnout operation of Kelly and David and everybody that was trying to help them with turnout is it didn't allow the entire focus to be on that. And as a result, we have John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock now.
To ask the question in a different way, but it is a thread of the previous conversation with respect to that U.S. Senate runoff. I firmly believe that the state of Georgia is the first Republican, purple, conservative-ish state to divorce themselves from President Donald Trump. Do you agree with that statement?
In what regard? Walk me through.
His opinion means less in the state of Georgia than it does in Wyoming.
I think Georgia's been a tough state for Donald Trump. I mean, I think he would probably even admit that if you were ever able to get him on your podcast.
I'll put that out there.
Yeah,
this
I mean, look, it's been, and I think that's a byproduct of, you know, not only did we have one runoff on the Senate on January 5th of 2019, but we had two and we lost both of them. And so, and then
Donald, it was going to be hard to split that one and one.
It was, and it always is. And you know, I mean, Trump was very vocal. Donald Trump was very vocal about his displeasure with the governor and Brad Raffensperger, and he got behind other candidates in those races, and then those candidates lost in primary. So, yeah, I think when you do get him on your podcast, I think he would say that Georgia's been a very tough state for him, you know, as a result of what it ended up happening, and certainly tougher probably than any others.
Do you feel like people use the term swing states, and now Georgia is firmly in that category, Ohio, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, but Georgia's not like the rest of them. What are the biggest differences if you were going to run a statewide and you were going to – people believe what they're told. So when you turn on CNN or MSNBC or Fox News, they say swing states. And it's like, well, these four are all the same. They're not even close to all the same. But how do you carve out that message on a national scale and compete differently in different places?
It depends on the candidates that you have running. It depends on the candidates that are running against the candidates that you have running, because the reality is the candidates are going to be the messengers, right? I mean, you can come up with a message all day long, look at polling data and all that, but the candidate has to deliver the message. And you deliver the message in earned media and paid media, and those are your two choices.
What's more important?
Paid media is more important, especially to Republicans. Republicans aren't going to get a fair shake with traditional media. We never have. And it's more defined now. Whether you like Donald Trump or don't like Donald Trump, the one thing that he did unequivocally is make them show their hands. And now we know, and they even embraced how they have an agenda. So if you're a Republican, you're never going to get a fair shake in the traditional media. And so you just got to try to do the best you can. But paid media is going to be more important.
I want to ask about local. You know about local coverage of political races as much as anybody, and you have relationships with all kinds of people at the AJC. And so you say that knowing that they write with 55-gallon drums of ink, and mm-hmm. we like people over there.
Oh, of course.
But when you look at the coverage, and I will offer this criticism to Greg Bluestein, who I have fed stories to, who has offered me feedback. We are friendly.
Of course.
But it is a 10-1. You can't look at candidates. It's a 10-1 Democrat to Republican. It looks like Stacey Abrams has never done anything wrong and Brian Kemp struggles to find the bathroom in the morning.
Yeah, look.
When you ask him about that, he will adamantly deny that he has a bias at all. It's insane.
He has to do that. And look, and you're exactly right. The Atlanta Journal and Constitution, now it's just the Atlanta Journal, I think, is
the paywall.
They clearly have an agenda. They have good reporters, good people. Doesn't mean Greg's not a good person. Doesn't mean Patricia's not a good person. They're good people, and they're good reporters. But I think everybody in this state knows they're a progressive newspaper. That's, by the way, they're not all that different than other newspapers in big media markets. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like we're picking on the AJC. It's just the reality. It's just what the space is right now. And again, I think the Trump dynamic and even maybe January 6th has made them more comfortable in their left-leaning reporting. And I'll give you a perfect example. I mean, I like Patricia Murphy. I think I'm friends with Patricia Murphy, and I think she is an incredibly talented reporter. But this is her second cycle at the newspaper. And I think she used to be Max Cleland's press secretary. And when you look at her writings politically from last cycle to this cycle, there's a big difference. I mean, last cycle, I think it was her first cycle back at the AJC. It was her first cycle back at the AJC. I think she was more sensitive about criticism that she might get because of roles that she had politically back. You look at what she's writing about now, and she has no qualms about letting people know where she is on the issue. And that's fine. I think most people in this state are smart enough to realize, you know, that's where the AJC is. And again, it doesn't mean they're bad people at all. It doesn't mean they're not good reporters, because they are. But they have an agenda, and I think the people of Georgia can see that.
To shift gears, so you were the general consultant for Doug Collins' U.S. Senate race.
Yes.
Who got outspent – what had to be $250 billion to what seemed like, I don't know, how much did he raise, $5 or $6 million?
It was substantial.
And you felt that shoved up your ass a nickel at a time every day?
It was very substantial. Yeah, look, we, you know, it's not like Doug and I had a conversation at the beginning of that race that went like this.
She's got more money than you.
Yeah, we didn't have that conversation. We knew that was the case. But if you remember, you know, Kelly and her team came out pretty early in that cycle with the number $20 million. We're prepared to spend $20 million, which is a substantial amount of money.
Yes.
$20 million is a lot of money. And in a primary, especially, it wasn't really a primary. We didn't have a primary. If we had a primary, she would have lost and Doug would have won. And I think most people would, especially with where she was right there, right? Her numbers weren't good in May of that year, and they could see they were much better over time when they had the massive spend. We didn't have the conversation, what if she spends $61 million? And the aggregate spend for that race on behalf of Kelly was $61 million. And if anybody wants to argue with me about it, I have it down on an Excel spreadsheet on my computer.
And you felt every roll of pennies.
Yeah, and that's only the money that I can document,
right?
That's only the money that I can document. And that includes what I call Kelly Inc., which is all the super PACs that were spending money on her behalf, the campaign committee, the super PAC that she had. And, you know, it was $61 million. And I'm not great at math, but that's a little more than 3X of $20 million. So what I'm getting at, it's a long way of saying I didn't sit down with Doug and say, can we win this race if she spends $61 million?
Would you have looked at him and said, we can't win this race if she's going to win?
It would have been very tough. And it was very tough. And we ended up losing by 5 points. But, you know.
Which is still pretty impressive.
Look, I think we ran a good campaign with what we had. We got outspent. I think we ran a really good campaign. But if you are willing to spend $60 million, that's a substantial investment in yourself.
Do you have a relationship with former Senator Loeffler at all?
I don't have a relationship with her. I certainly have relationships with some of those people that worked with her, and they're good people. And, you know, I think they did the best they could, and they ran a pretty good race.
I want to ask you about her voting initiative to register Republicans. Do you feel like there is more there with the greater Georgia? I put that in air quotes.
Yeah,
do you think it's an honest effort, or do you think that there's a relevancy play for something else?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, the reality is I like what Greater Georgia is doing. I'm all for Greater Georgia spending as much money as they can to help us have success at the ballot box in November. So I absolutely want to say that. I'm all for that. And I think, as I said, they're doing a good job. But I also think that we would all be naive not to think that she's looking possibly down the road at running for another seat. And, you know, maybe that's governor in 4 years. I mean, timing is everything in this business. Maybe it's not governor. I mean, we never know when the next big quote unquote opening is. We know what the calendar looks like. We know when we're going to have a Senate seat up, but you know,
but you don't know what the economy is.
100%. And so, yeah, look, I think she is, regardless of what the motivations are behind Greater Georgia, and I do think it's twofold. I mean, you know,
if you're betting money, you're saying she's running for governor.
I would, yes, I would put money down that. I would put money on that in Vegas, probably regardless of what the odds are. I think that's what they're, now that doesn't mean that it'll develop into that, right? I mean, as you said, things change. Her mind might change, but right now, I think that's not an unrealistic path for her to look at.
Well, everybody's got ulterior motives. I stepped away from elected office. I sit in the Dickey Broadcasting Company studios. Yeah, I profile mostly conservative people.
Yeah.
So few people ever ask themselves the next question. I'm not one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, the one thing that, you know, that she has, that she has going for that maybe you don't have going for you is an unlimited amount of money. to be able to engage. And but I'm just
become friends with her.
That's not a criticism of you, Ben, for not having an unlimited amount of money. I don't know that anybody has Kelly money. And it's just the reality of, and look, they've been very successful and they're not afraid to, they've shown they're not afraid to use their money in a political endeavor. And so, yeah, it immediately makes her, if she were to decide to run, and when she does decide to run, it immediately makes her, if not the favorite for something, she has a history of kind of putting her money where her mouth is. And I think, you know, her team's smart enough to know that too. So
I will end here. And I told you, for those of you sitting at home that don't know, Chip Lake is a part of the Herschel Walker team.
Indeed.
Of people. And I told him, dude, if you come on, we will not talk about Herschel Walker. But he said, I'll give you one question. And so here is my one question, and I'm going to keep it away from politics. I have heard that Herschel Walker has never lifted a weight in his life. Can you confirm that he looks like he was built in a factory based on sit-ups and push-ups?
Well, I will answer that question this way. I'm not a spokesman for the campaign. We have very talented.
Have you seen him do push-ups?
I have not seen him do push-ups, but I know that Herschel doesn't lift weights, Ben, and people don't believe that. Herschel does push-ups, sit-ups. He rides the Peloton, and he runs on the treadmill. And he takes physical fitness and healthy very seriously. Kind of reminds me of you and I,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
You know, he takes it more serious than you and I do.
Speak for yourself.
And no, Herschel's, you know, he's 60 years old.
How is his work ethic?
Oh my gosh. You can't keep up.
You can't, he doesn't tire.
And he doesn't sleep very much either. I mean, he's, he gets more done in a day because, while the average person might be sleeping, you know, 7-8 hours a night, and that's not Herschel. You know, Herschel's he's up working, he's working out. And I mean, there's when you run for statewide office, there are very limited opportunities to work out. And so he'll work out very late at night, very early in the morning.
He's like in the back of the 15 passenger van, just
or sometimes in the middle of the night, right? And it's something that's very important to him. It gives him energy, it gives him focus, and it's inspiring, really. I mean, it inspires me
to walk the stairs,
to eat a little bit less Five Guys, right? And to do a little bit more than I'm doing.
Look, because, I'm not going to take the elevator today.
Yeah, look, I'm
Herschel. You know, Herschel taught me that.
Well, we won't take it down. We took it up to get over here, but we'll walk downstairs.
Yeah, I don't actually even know where the stairs are.
Yeah.
Chip Lake, it is great to have you, man. I hope.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks for listening. It's been another episode of the Ben Burnett Show. We'll see you next week.
Thanks.
Thanks to my friends at Solomon Brothers. You can find them at 17th Floor Tower Place in Buckhead or at Liberty Park Village off Old Milton Parkway in Alpharetta.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Is there chaos in your closet? Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart, and there needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and in Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com, and then call us for a free in-home consultation.